The year is 1988. The Soviet Union begins its perestroika program thanks to Mikhail Gorbachev and his glasnost approach. The 1988 Winter Olympics are held in Calgary, with mascots Heidi and Howdy leading Canada to a whopping 5 medals, none of them gold. Classic masterpiece Who Framed Roger Rabbit was released, giving children and adults everywhere a lifelong fear of the dip. James Hansen brings to light concerns of a new and troubling danger called global warming. The 1988 Summer Olympics are held in Seoul, South Korea, with mascots Hodori and Hosuni leading South Korea to a whopping 33 medals, 12 of them gold. Can these three people take their talents to the global stage and stand atop their song-premised podiums? This is Frankenstein's Jukebox.
Hello, Daniel. How are you doing today?
I'm quite well. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing really, really well. It's 88.
Good to hear.
Things are looking up for...
Yes.
America.
Sure. Let's go with
Internet
that.
Internet trolls everywhere are being born in 1988.
You love to hear it.
Absolutely, you do.
We have a special guest today.
Yeah, we do.
And I am very excited. So 1988 was a very special year for me. It's the year that I done got born.
Yes. Love that.
Yep.
What could your guest possibly have in common with you being born in the year
with me
Dungan
got born?
Yes, Jason Bourne.
Yes. So our guest today is my twin sister, Jenny. Hello, Jenny.
Hello. I done got born at the same time as Dan. And now I'm here.
Technically, you're 2 minutes older than I am.
Yes, I done got born Dan. 2 minutes before Dan done got get born.
Yes. Been born.
Oh, God.
I think born twice was in the sentence I said.
Born.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jenny. We're very excited to have you here.
Absolutely. I'm so delighted to be here.
This is going to be such a fun episode. I can't wait. It's
going to be a very fun episode. The three of us got to hang out at a Dessa concert last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was so much fun.
So fun.
Very, very, very fun.
An absolute highlight of the year for me.
100%.
And yeah, we're so excited. Jenny, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a cancer researcher living in Austin, Texas, with my beautiful dog, Pearl, who is sleeping behind me on the couch and doesn't understand why I'm talking.
Yep, that is about right. And Pearl is one of the sweetest dogs you'll ever get to meet. So I very much love Pearl.
Oh,
she's a perfect little lady. There we go. Move, and then you can see her in the. Sorry, podcast listeners at home, but just pretend that you're looking at a white French bulldog sleeping on a couch.
If you follow us on Twitter, you'll go ahead and take a look on our Twitter, and there will be a picture, a screen cap that I just grabbed of the sweet sleeping dog that is Pearl P. Potato.
Oh, yeah, that's her full name. Her full name is Pearl P. Potato.
What does the P stand for?
Depends. Every day it's a little different.
Nice.
A little bit. I think today it stands for Pepper, but that's just my opinion. I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah, we can call it Pepper.
Love that.
Or punk spicy. Ass.
Spicy in a different way.
So I know Jenny and I have particularly thoughts about how our 1988 was. Jamie, how was your 1988?
Well, I turned 5 that year, so that probably means I started kindergarten. We had moved to Nebraska from Colorado, and I went back to Colorado to graduate from preschool. Nice. I'm not really sure why that trip was a thing that happened, but it was cool to, you know, to matriculate with people that I have very, very vague memories of. Kindergarten, I don't know whether it was 88 or 89 where I completely wet my pants and my stepdad had to come bring me pants. And there was where my bathroom troubles began. But that's not what we came to this podcast for. I just was coming up with podcast names for where that would belong. Never mind. So yeah, I mean, you know, it was a good time for. I remember watching. I feel like I watched Roger Rabbit in the theater, but I'm not positive about that. I really liked Roger Rabbit a lot, and fortunately, Christopher Lloyd didn't scar me for life there, because I was on my way to loving, if not already quite loving, Back to the Future. So
that movie scared. And to be fair, a lot of stuff scared me as a kid.
Sure.
But when he, like, when he lost it and had his, like, crazy eyes, his toon eyes and everything, and just, like, went off the deep end, that scared me so much. That combined with the terror at 20,000 feet Twilight Zone.
Oh, sure.
I was confident that I was going to look out my bedroom window and see... Count, what was his name?
Wasn't he the judge? Movie?
The judge, that's it. And see the judge with his crazy cartoon eyes staring at me through the window. And that terrified me for years.
You had a bit of judge dread.
I had some judge dread, yes.
Great.
That's exactly it.
Great. Jenny, did you have judge dread?
You know, I do. I was afraid of the Twilight Zone terror 20,000 feet. I am sure I was scared of the judge from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It is creepy, but I think I was a little less terrified. Also, as a characteristic of me as a child, I had a, like, creepy advanced understanding that TV and movies weren't real.
Oh, and, like, cool.
They couldn't trick me into feeling emotions, and so I just wasn't sad. We just watched Bambi, and we watched Old Yeller, and I was like, nothing is sad. That wasn't real. That didn't happen. There's nothing sad about that. That is a cartoon, and everybody's crying, and Bambi is very sad, and I'm like, I don't... And not only am I not sad, I didn't understand why anyone else would be sad, because I knew it was fake. Anyway, it was a way that was like...
Stop drawing them.
Yeah, sort of advanced, like sort of too advanced, and then also sort of like not advanced enough to have empathy that like to grow that over time. So I think I was like freaked out on a small scale, but I was not. I don't remember being really terrified by that, but I do remember being a little bit convinced that there was going to be a monster outside my window.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was, you know, I didn't cross pollinate. It was just the Twilight Zone monster.
Right.
And it wasn't until Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band that Jenny felt any sort of feelings.
She's leaving home. Then,
what was that?
I'm sorry, I was jumping the gun.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The movie with the Gibbs.
The movie.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, whatever day we watched that, I was like, it hit me and I like sobbed at the end of that movie.
Strawberry Fields died and Jenny was just... inconsolable.
And that was like the first movie that's not true. The first movie that I cried is my mom showed me a sad movie that was like based on a true story and was like, this is based on a true story. Jenny.
You can't avoid that empathy there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
At some point I started getting just like psychological tests to see whether I was a sociopath. So.
No, she's not a sociopath. She's just a doctor.
Just a... just a weirdo.
Yep.
I think the first movie I cried at was Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Solid pick. If you're going to cry, cry at that.
It was in the theater, and I did not like the public crying, even as a child. I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But I'm not able to stop it, so... I hope someone comes along and takes this exact same story and makes billions and billions of dollars on it. That was what
I thought. But with giant blue people?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think it's enough with that. I think it's time to move to maybe our first real segment of the show.
Yeah, let's do it. I think that it's time to go on to get some magic tickets and... go on a random number generator tour.
Yay!
I believe it is time for a random number generator tour.
First you get a random number, then you get another number. Take a look at all the contracts that went on the year. Take the time to figure out which show you'd rather have a seat for. That's how you play random number generator. That's how you play random number generator. That's how you play random number generator.
Great, 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 great. All right, so this is a segment on the show where we have a magic ticket, a pair of magic tickets that will take us to a time and place of our choosing for a concert tour that happened in 1988. I have a list of 29 tours that I could find on Wikipedia and also from my brain thinking about who might have been on tour. Got me like one extra. And so we're going to take, each of us is going to somehow get a random number generator, two random numbers of however we're going to get that. And that will give us some options. And then we'll pick between the two of them. I'm going to take off this one where last time we didn't know who that was and it was hard for me to explain. So it's going to be 28. And we'll pick which tour we want to go to, and then I will put the set lists for those tours up on the Twitter, like I have done between this recording and the publishing of 1988 for the 1989 Indigo Girls and Aerosmith tours. I've listened to both those sets. They're very, very good.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
I'll bet.
So I think the guest should go first.
Jenny? I agree. I do believe Jenny should go first.
However you want to get two numbers between 1 and 28, Jenny.
All right, I'm going to go for 7 and 16.
Oh, that's a good couple of dates from someone that was born on July 16th, like me.
Oh my gosh!
Nice!
I'm a genius!
That would be amazing, amazing. So 7 is George Michael on the Faith Tour. And 16 is Bob Dylan once again contending for being picked on the never ending, whatever Bob Dylan calls his tour. This is the tour that never ends. It goes on and on, my friends, I believe is what he calls it. Jenny, are you seeing George or Bob?
Wow.
Oh, boy.
I think, you know, either is going to be a heck of an experience.
For sure.
I think I'm going to see Bob Dylan.
Very nice.
I think that'll be fun. It'll be a real experience.
I saw Bob Dylan in 2004, and that experience tells me that in 1988, it definitely would have been really great to see Bob Dylan. So I'm looking forward to figuring out that. Bob Dylan's also one that, he does do a set list. At the time, I think he was a lot more like, let's pick and choose what we're going to play and not just. Yeah, so that is a very good choice. And
excellent.
I'm looking forward to that. Daniel, do you have some random numbers for me?
I do. I have generated both of my random numbers, and I will put them in the form of Carolina Hurricanes hockey players.
Oh, great. Okay, hold on.
Because that will generate very... That'll translate very clearly for you. I will go with Brett Pesci and Jalen Chatfield.
Okay.
Let's which see. Equal to 22 and 5.
All right. Five. Well, now I am so excited for this. 22 and 5. So 5 is Kiss.
But okay.
22 is Iron Maiden.
Oh.
So which pyrotechnics are you going to be watching in 1988?
I think I got to go Kiss.
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
I think that's correct.
Boo!
Oh, getting the thumbs down from Jenny.
Fun fact about me, I have seen Iron Maiden.
and so you would recommend that would be the one that Daniel should go to?
I'm just saying, I think it'd be a wild time. Now, I don't know enough about Kiss to know what they are in 1988. Like, where they are in there. Because there are some periods of Kiss that I would be very uninterested in. Sure. And then there's some periods of Kiss that would be great. I'm not saying don't go see Kiss. They're great. Iron Maiden would be a hell of a show.
Iron Maiden would be a hell of a show in 88. That's a very good
point. I saw them in what I'm going to call probably 2013. And it was a hell of a show in 2013 with, like, Bruce Dickinson being 75 years old or however old he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can't imagine seeing it in 1988.
Now, I believe that Iron Maiden is touring for most of the 80s, so the opportunity to see Iron Maiden is going to crop up. Also, the people that are filling out the Wikipedia 80s tours wikis are Iron Maiden fans, because I'm pretty sure they're all over the place. So,
Kiss probably also touring a whole lot throughout the 80s, true. Let's be honest.
True.
And prime Kiss is probably late 70s, early 80s.
That's true.
So, Jenny, you may have a point there.
Listen, you're going to have a great
but
time.
But I made my choice, and I stick with it.
Okay. I was crossing out the circle too quickly. The circle will remain unbroken. Okay. And, Daniel, could you generate me two numbers, please?
I would love to generate you two numbers. You're going to have 8 and 12.
All right. I think I am stoked to discuss this. I think it's harder than it looks. 8 is New Kids on the Block.
Ooh.
And 12 is Judas Priest.
Oh, dang.
So, like, I think Judas Priest is probably also in that late 70s, early 80s is the prime time for them. And 1988 is just about as primetime New Kids on the Block as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
So I'm going to pay tribute to Child Jamie, who did have Hangin' Tough on cassette tape, and I'm going to see NKOTB in 1988.
I think that's the right call.
Amazing.
I think you gotta, like, 88 New Kids on the Block is so just peak New Kids on the Block. You got to go for it.
Absolutely. I never can tell with these what they're going to be, and they so far have not failed to just be just so fun.
Fascinating.
Yeah, amazing. Our three shows could not be much more disparate than, right? than Kiss, New Kids, and Bob Dylan.
Now I'm imagining them swapping sets and seeing who does the best cover set, and I think that a Kiss doing NKOTB set is something that I think that they would hate and I would love.
Yes. To be fair, I feel like almost anyone covering any Bob Dylan set is going to be better than Bob Dylan doing his own music. He's an amazing songwriter. He's not a great performer.
We call that the Joan Baez theory.
Yes, we do. So I would love to hear Kiss covering Bob Dylan. That'd be
amazing.
Insane.
All Dylan sets.
Oops, all Dylan.
Fantastic. So those sets will go up between now and the freezing death of the universe. So
yep. reasonable.
And that's a guarantee.
That's a guarantee.
I stick to timelines, and that's what I'm going to keep. So,
and that's why you're on a podcast with timeline in the name of it.
That's right, Franken's Timelines Jukebox.
That's it, Franken's Timeline Jukebox. Well, I think maybe we should pivot to our next segment.
I think we absolutely should.
So let's get into our honorable monsters.
Yes, let's do. Absolutely, let's do it.
It's not that they weren't good enough. It's not that they weren't up to snuff. It's just that we didn't pick them.
Woo. Now, I forgot to put it out there on Twitter and or Discord.
Great.
So we don't have any listener-submitted honorable monsters.
Right. Yep. And
but.
Yes.
Let's just jump right into it. And again, starting with our fantastic guest, Jenny.
Yes.
Who are your honorable monsters for today?
Thank you. And I am a listener, so I think this counts. As listeners,
fair.
Okay. As listeners submitted.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Fair point.
You know, I count.
Yeah, you do.
My honorable monsters, I'm going to start off with one that I feel like is pretty obvious and was almost my choice of song, but I think is a little too straightforward of a pick, which is Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Very much in the zeitgeist,
so
everybody re-remembering how good that song is. And I just do want to say I had it picked as probably my 1988 before it re-entered the zeitgeist.
Same.
Yeah. I assumed somebody else also. And then it had a little too much conversation. And I was like, you know, it's still wonderful, but maybe we'll pick something different to talk about.
Sure.
I also went with They Might Be Giants. Frankenstein's Jukebox alums, specifically the song They'll Need a Crane off of Lincoln.
Solid.
Weird, beautiful, sort of sad song. I went with...
The Might Be Giants, very good at weird, beautiful, sort of sad songs.
Sort of sad for songs. Sure. It's a great... it's a great band for that. Sorry, my whole brain shut down for a second while I was talking.
It's okay.
I went with What I Am by Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians, which was like
kind of
a last minute find.
Solid.
I discovered that you can't look for top indie songs of 1988 because that is not what it was called. You have to look for top alternative songs of 1988 because that is what it is called. Recent choice, The Pixies. I'm going to go with Where Is My Mind?
Yep.
Okay.
And my last honorable monster is Nothing But Flowers by the Talking Heads.
Very nice.
Okay.
Solid call.
For sure. First appearance of Talking Heads, I'm absolutely positive, not the last.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you mind, Jamie, if I jump in
please
with my honorable monsters?
Please.
Because I have three similar honorable monsters.
Yes,
yeah,
twins.
Same.
Okay, I will say, you guys, you always start by talking about how hard it was to like narrow it down, and I just did think 88, I was looking through and being like, there is a lot of this stuff I can take off the table right away. There are a lot of contenders that are
for
not
sure
here, or bands that I'm like,
a lot
I love
of stuff
this
that's
band
like, no,
nothing good in that album or whatever it was, so I'm not shocked, but please, Dan, take it away.
I would love to. I went with Fast Car by Tracy Chapman.
Ding.
Where Is My Mind by the Pixies.
Ding.
Nothing But Flowers by Talking Heads.
Ding. 3 for 3.
solid. I really almost picked Nothing But Flowers as my full-on pick. It is one of my absolute favorite Talking Heads songs. It is so good. And Guster's cover of it. Like, Guster does a live cover of it that is so good. That I absolutely love.
A controversial opinion, but I also think the Talking Heads are in the Bob Dylan trajectory of almost always being improved by being covered. Not that I'm not saying they're great, but I think the nature of their music means that when they get covered, there's so much going on that it makes for really excellent cover songs.
I'm gonna expound upon that. I think that they captured the perfect concert experience for Talking Heads on film. And so anything, I feel like I would go into any Talking Heads concert expecting Stop Making Sense, and I would not want to do that just because I don't want to be disappointed.
So I was talking to my dad last night at the hockey game. I was like, Dad, here's the thing. I am debating between two songs right now for which one I pick for this Frankenstein's Jukebox episode. One of them is Nothing But Flowers. The other one is the one that I wound up picking. And I am having such a hard time picking between the two of them because I love both of these songs so much. And we talked about it for a bit about looking at what other songs by those artists throughout the rest of the decade could be potentially picked.
Good call.
Because
yeah,
the Talking Heads are prolific throughout the 80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked at length about Stop Making Sense, where I was like, it's hard to go with any song from Stop Making Sense because those songs were already released before Stop Making Sense. Right. However, the Stop Making Sense album and experience is so different that it counts as its own thing.
Agreed.
But anyway, I got the opportunity last year to see Stop Making Sense in theaters, and it was phenomenal. Amazing. It was so great. I got to see it with my parents and my friend Angie, and it was just amazing.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
My other two songs are Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison.
This song's just six words long. I love it.
This song is just six words long. Thank you, Weird Al. And then a kind of Christmas song? Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues.
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
Now, it does have a word that I really, really, really hate in there that is super, super problematic. But
Drunk Tank.
Other than that, it is a great song and I really love it. It's one of my, I don't know, maybe top 10 favorite Christmas songs.
Yeah.
Just in its novelty, I guess, maybe.
That song will make me cry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a great song. So, that's what I've got. Jamie, what did you bring as your honorable monsters?
All right, let's see. Honorable monsters for 1988. Tracy Chapman, Fast Car.
Three for three.
Three for three. The first thing I put down, it was sort of like, okay, Fast Car and what else? And then I eliminated it because it fell into the category that occasionally honorable monsters fall under, which is what? What are you going to pull from this? Perfect?
Yeah.
Are we going to pull perfect from this as an aspect? Because I think that's asking too much of even our abilities. I picked Gigantic from Pixies.
Ooh,
really love that song, but I did pick it between it and Where Is My Mind. So Where Is My Mind was my honorable monster. And I think that counts. I picked They Might Be Giants. Anna Eng was one of my honorable monsters.
Solid call.
And I had R.E.M. Stand on there. I think Michael Stipe would disagree with me on that pick, but he's wrong. And that's I might be mixing up. I think that's one that he has been like, ugh. But also yeah. Anyways, love Michael Stipe. Great.
Given that the council has made a stupid ass decision, I've elected to ignore it.
Exactly. And then my last honorable monster is one I think was on everyone's mind when they were picking amongst these. And that is, of course, Paula Abdul's Opposites Attract.
I almost put that on there, but that would have been more for the music video than anything else, so sure. I don't think that really counted.
Sure, absolutely. I think that the thing that I would have picked it for is I love a song that has a formula, so then I can start thinking of what the next lyric is going to be and what the rhyme, like, I like one where it's like, yeah, it's opposites. That one says one thing and that one says the opposite. And that's the song. Done. Opposites attract. Yep. It's the same thing as NoFX's monosyllabic girl, which is one syllable. That's the thing, is that she understands one syllable and then that's it. And I love things like that, because it's like, yeah, you know what's going to happen. The opposite. And I like that one.
All right, quick question for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick between either NoFX or NXS. Which one do you go with?
What year?
Just in general.
I'm gonna slide right past a really dark joke and say,
oh boy.
For listening to the music, I think I'd be more. I would have a more fun time at a NoFX concert. If I had backstage passes, probably I'd pick NXS, just because lifestyle-wise, I probably would have more fun at NXS than a NoFX concert. Unless we're talking NoFX when they were a straight-edge band before they were famous at all, in which case, I don't know.
Fair.
I don't know.
I know a minimal amount about either of those, so I'm just going to go for NXS, because just a gut feeling.
Yeah,
I also am going NXS, if not just for What You Need, which is one of my favorite songs of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I could name three NXS songs and maybe zero NoFX songs.
Sure.
So that's where I'm going with that.
Fair enough.
But I think maybe now it's time to move on from our honorable monsters to our official picks.
Yes.
So let's keep it going in the same order. Jenny,
oh boy,
do you want to hit us with what you officially picked?
Yes, my official pick was I Hate Myself for Loving You by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
It's great, a great pick.
Thank you.
I was caught off guard by this pick.
Can't.
But in a very pleasant way.
Oh, good. Yes, we did have a near complete overlap on our choices with a couple exceptions. But Fast Car was on the list early, and Joan Jett was on the list early. There was not a lot of debate that I was going to pick one of these two. And
nice.
This one's just a great song.
Perfect. I love it. I cannot wait to hear the aspects you bring for that. Jamie,
yes.
What did you bring?
This was a pick where I looked at all my honorable monsters and I was like, yeah, all of these are great songs. But what if I pick a song as my official pick that I have no context for other than just really, really loving it when it came on the radio? I have no album experience, no band experience. I think I saw them perform it on SNL one time, but I love this song very, very much. And it is Cult of Personality by Living Color. It's just one of those songs where when it would come on the radio, I'd be like, what on earth? Oh, it's right. Okay. Right. Got it. Cause it starts off with, it's just structurally a really, really interesting little piece of music. And I really like it a lot.
It is. It's got a really great riff to it. When we were kids, we used to, like, my parents both performed at a comedy club out in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And this song would be one that would play, like, frequently out there. And, like, my dad just put it on a bunch of on his playlist that he would play before the shows. And so, like, it's one that I would just immediately, like, I'd hear it and I would be instantly transported back to when I was 8 and we were out in Chapel Hill at these shows.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And then when it hit, I want to say it was Guitar Hero 3 or Guitar Hero 80s.
Mm.
I was just like, oh, yeah. And I didn't realize how, like, good of a guitar riff it was in that song, but it was really great.
Yeah.
And the song really grew on me from there. So I really love this. I really love this pick.
Yeah. Thanks. Daniel, speaking of good picks, what did you bring to the...
Well, you put it as one of your honorable mentions.
I know.
Honorable Monsters. It is my absolute favorite song by They Might Be Giants off of their album Lincoln. It is Anna Ang. Just a great song.
Oh, speaking of songs that I first heard on the live album, I first heard that on Severe Tire Damage. And
nice.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
My They Might Be Giants experience has been quite the jumping around in time
sort of stuff. I can imagine if you first heard Anna Ang off Severe Tire Damage, that's quite a journey.
It was like Flood, Severe Tire Damage, Mink Car, nothing. I think no, like it was, it's been a trip of probably ill-conceived construction. And
Yeah.
For those of you listening that are not familiar with They Might Be Giants, it's like you just started by watching Rocky V and then Rocky III, and then you were like, I wonder where Rocky got started. Should we watch Rocky?
Guess I'll never know. It's like the time when I didn't realize Empire Strikes Back existed and thought I just went Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, and was like, huh, weird. They've just jumped around in plot a lot. How'd that guy get frozen? If only there was some sort of movie to explain it.
That's exactly it.
My dad was like, what? Okay, I guess we'll go to the video store. What do you mean?
Beautiful.
That is hilarious.
This Apollo Creed guy seems important.
Right. Oh, fantastic. I am so excited about merging these picks into a song brumize.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what everybody brings. So let's just jump right in. Jenny, what aspects did you bring from your song?
All right.
To jump in with us here.
I am so excited. My number one aspect is going to be a destructive relationship. I like the tortured, like, I hate myself for loving you, and I want you to want me back just so I can tell you I don't want to be with you. The, like, everything about this is toxic. I'm not recommending destructive relationships to anyone, but man, I love songs about destructive relationships. And I will say, They'll Need a Crane by They Might Be Giants, no pun intended, destructive relationship.
Very destructive relationship.
Fairy Tale of New York, beautiful Christmas song about a very destructive relationship. It's just, it's a theme.
Fast car,
some destructive relationships in there too.
Very destructive relationship, depressing as hell song.
Very depressing. Nobody was doing good. Yes.
The Soviet Union was.
Everyone was on the struggle bus in 1988.
So thematically, I would like it to be a destructive relationship.
Okay.
The next aspect I wrote down, and every time I saw it, I thought, what has happened to my phone? Did my phone break? What are these words? And then I had to read it slowly and go, oh, yes, that's my aspect. Because what it says is, away, yay. Because, for those of you who have ever listened to I Hate Myself for Loving You, there's a bit where she really stretches out, you took my pride away, but she says, away, yay. She really stretches out that last word and, you know, wiggles it. Now, I am a musician, as you can tell by my knowledge of music, to say somebody wiggled the word. Uh-huh. So I want... Word wiggles? Is that the term? I don't know if you know that term. I could explain it in a different, you know, less musical way for those of you who are not as experienced as I am. But whatever that's called, I'd like that to happen on a word somewhere.
So okay.
Okay, so that's more, that's not a lyric, that's more of like something to do in the lyric. Something like that.
Yeah, vocal styling of singing.
Got it.
Because it could just be, maybe in the lyrics it just says away, and then she just, you know, goes for it. But
right.
I'd like that stretched out word. And then my last one is going to be a one-time percussion-only chorus. So again, towards the end of the song, there is a bit where the guitars drop out and it's just the drums and also the hand claps. And they do the chorus again like they mean it, but with no instrumentation except percussion. And I would like that.
I love that. I love that so much.
Excellent.
I'm just saying,
solid.
I did know the word percussion and I wrote that down. So that's pretty technical.
Yes, I love these aspects so much. They're so good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I agree.
Agree.
Perfect. Doing it already. All right, Jamie.
Those words wiggle.
Yes. As our lyricist, she is on point with it. She's ready to go.
It won't just say away. We're going phonetic with this thing.
That's right.
So, in just the most Jamie way possible.
Oh, boy. My first, oh, boy.
My first aspect, listener, if this is your first time listening, this is going to seem wild. Daniel is already doing some reacting. I want clips of speeches from the following years.
Yep.
1999, 1997, and 1969, which correspond to the Malcolm X, JFK, and FDR speeches. The distance they were from 1988 is the distance that these years are from. Yeah,
that tracks. Yeah. That's the most Jamie thing you can do.
So, yeah, that's the easy one. The other ones are, I want a really bombastic bass drum. Like, I listened to it after I wrote that aspect, and I was like, oh, the bass drum isn't that bombastic. But when I wrote it, I was basically hearing When the Levee Breaks, so... I'm going to stick with that. And when I listen to it in my head, the bass drum is really kicking it. So that's my second aspect. And my third aspect will always, when I pick a song with this, this is always going to be an aspect. So a fast breakdown at the end. I love a fast breakdown at the end.
You do love a fast breakdown, don't you?
Sometimes I have to pick other songs so as not to pick a fast breakdown at the end again. But not in 1988. Not in 1988.
No.
So those are my aspects, just me being as me as I possibly can be.
I love it.
Amazing.
I love it.
Daniel, tie this whole thing together, please. Let's figure it out.
We'll see what we can do. All right, so my aspects, we've got staccato guitars. So throughout most of the song of Anna Ang, we get the bump, ba bump, bump, ba bump, 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 bump. Very quick notes. They don't hold them very long. That's staccato. We just get very quick stabs of those notes, and I like that a lot. We have lyrics that seem nonsensical. Make a hole with the gun perpendicular. What? In the name of this town with a desktop globe. What? It doesn't. The lines don't make a lot of sense, and I love it.
It's one of those things where if I squint while I'm listening, if I do some ear squints, I feel like it makes sense, and then it feels almost like I've been dreaming and then trying to like piece together what it is that made sense.
Yep.
Doesn't work, and I like it a lot.
We had a dear friend in high school who had a complicated theory about what the whole song was about. Like she was also They Might Be Giants fan, and she had like all this kind of like put all the disparate lyrics into this song about two secret agents who are in love with each other, right? I think like Killing Eve, but as Anna Ang. Like I guess they're not both.
Exactly that.
It was that. Yeah. It was that. It was like they keep just missing each other and whatever. It was a very complicated story, but lovely.
It was phenomenal.
Fantastic.
And next up, I will... my third aspect is a reference to a Disney World ride. All Alone at the 64 World's Fair, 80 Dolls yelling Small Girl After All. John Flansburg was at the 1964 World's Fair where they pioneered It's a Small World After All, and he misheard the line and thought they were saying Small Girl After All. But it was actually It's a Small World After All.
Right. After all.
So it's... I would love a reference to a Disney World ride in there.
And Dan, just checking, do you want to count the number of years it's been from the 1964 World's Fair to 1988 and then have a Disney World ride?
I don't want to go that deep into it.
I just don't know the rules here.
That would just be the year 2000. We could, we could do that. If you...
Let me just do a quick Google. Disney World Rides 2000. The Enchanted Tiki Room opened up in 2000. Don't want to reference that. That was not a great version of that particular attraction.
To call it a ride, I mean.
Yeah.
So we're just going to go with general.
Got it.
Ride.
General ride.
All right, is this where we review?
This is where we review. We've got a lot to go on here. Musical aspects, I've got staccato guitars and a fast breakdown at the end. And one-time percussion-only chorus.
And a bombastic bass drum.
Oh yeah, good point. A bombastic bass drum. Lyric aspects, I've got lyrics that seem nonsensical, a reference to a Disney World ride, and a destructive relationship. Other aspects, we've got word wiggles, away, yay, 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 and clips of speeches from 1999, 1997, and 1969.
Correct. Great.
Great.
Great. I think it kind of, flows together pretty naturally.
For sure.
It does. Yeah. So I'm taking a look at some 1999 speeches.
I'll go to 1997.
And I'll go to, 1969 is the last one?
Yeah.
1969. Alan Greenspan gave his Do Efficient Financial Markets Mitigate Financial Crises speech.
Sure.
He also gave his Trade and Technology speech. He gave a lot of speeches in 99. Status of Y2K Preparedness. That would be a fun one.
That would be a fun one. Ooh, Fiona Apple gave her The World is Bullshit acceptance speech at the 1997 Video Music Awards.
Ooh, that's a good one to work with.
So that's one, yeah.
All right, what I have is Richard Nixon's address to the nation on the war in Vietnam. Are we having fun, guys? We all having fun?
We're having fun. Listen, this is a solid, solid call. Wins all around as I see it.
Okay. Betty Friedan. Friedan? Is this how we pronounce this?
Yeah, Betty Friedan.
Yeah.
Delivered her speech on the first National Conference on Abortion Law.
Ooh, I like that.
National Association for the Appeal of Abortion Laws, a women's civil right, 1969. So I don't know what vibe we're going for here, because we're going to have nonsensical lyrics, Disney World ride, and destructive relationships. So I don't know that we're going for a political bent, but...
I love having a speech about Y2K... A speech about fuck the music industry and a speech about pro-abortion, because I feel like that really pushes maybe not the nonsensical but the unrelated aspect of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So I really like that approach to it.
I mean, great. Hey, listen, we got there, and I'm really happy that was the first thing we did for this, because it felt like that was good teamwork, is the thing.
Was.
Finish our homework
first.
Quickly
jot down all of these, so I can look up the actual video of the speeches and get some audio going.
Would you like me to send you the link to the Fiona Apple?
Please do.
Okay.
And who did you say gave that speech on anti-abortion? Or not anti-abortion.
Pro-abortion.
That's not the right word.
Betty Friedan.
Pro-abortion. Thank you.
Women's rights are human rights.
I mean... like, it's not that.
It's great. Oh, all right. Well,
all right.
So then we have to take a look at all of our stuff and see, do we have a specific genre we want to look at? Musically, we've got staccato guitars, fast breakdown at the end, one-time percussion only chorus, and bombastic bass drum.
I don't know a lot about music, but it feels like a punk song.
I feel either punk or ska. I feel very strongly about ska.
Also, so I'm not sure.
You two love ska. You two are always trying to write ska songs.
Would you like to do ska core or again? Or is this the time when we're doing? Because we haven't released Don't Make Me Tap the Sign, the ska core song I wrote.
We haven't released Don't Make Me Tap the Sign yet, but I'm working on it.
Let's do more ska.
I feel like
it lends itself to some nonsense lyrics and some speeches.
It really does, though.
And
it
some
really does.
Destructive relationship.
Yeah, nonsensical lyrics for sure. Destructive relationship for sure. Word wiggles? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You can get some word wiggles and some ska for sure.
Okay, I will say, I think for the combination of destructive relationships and nonsensical, Jamie should write some destructive relationship lyrics and then just, like, take out some chunks.
I was thinking about, yeah, like, having sort of, like, a concrete poem sort of idea of, like, what miscommunication looks like.
Beautiful. That sounds perfect.
I was sort of thinking about having some of the lyrics make perfect sense and then some of the lyrics make no fucking sense at all.
Yeah.
Because I think that is how it feels when that kind of thing breaks down. But, well, I agree with that. I love that. I think that if there's something in the Y2K speech about, like, shutdown or, like, a breakdown kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that might be a good thing to do.
To lead into the breakdown.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I could also look deeper into that.
Do like an erosion of sensical, like where it starts off making sense and then gradually makes less and less sense until like there's a breakdown and then it, you know, breaks down completely. Like, literally. Yep. Like, breakdown.
I like it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and give it to me.
So, anything else we need to do on this, or do we think we're in a good spot?
What's the Disney ride?
Ooh. What's the most ska Disney ride, Jenny, do you think?
Oh, my gosh. The Tomorrowland Transit Authority?
Okay, now... the title track from No Doubt's Tragic Kingdom, I'm fairly certain contains an announcement from a Disneyland ride that could not, like, it, which, if you told me it was the Transit Authority, the monorail sort of situation, I would not be surprised at all. And I think that that's really funny because that means that that is canonically...
That's true.
Basically the most ska thing you could have come up with. Like we have literary reference to there's precedent.
Yeah.
I also feel like...
I'm going to put out Carousel of Progress just because I feel like there's probably a lot of cool, horribly ironic things to clip from that if we could find, like... It's an incredibly popular opinion.
I mean, I'm super down.
Dan just made 1,000 faces, and I was waiting for them to say something. I was like, yes, Dan, just like, I couldn't tell if that was a ooh or a ha. It was all of the emotions.
It was a ha?
Ha? For sure. That sounds great.
Love the Carousel of Progress. It's super ska.
So ska. I think anything in Epcot that has that like vibe of... this is what we thought the future was going to be, feels like the right vibe.
Yeah.
And I think Carousel of Progress checks that box.
Yeah, the TTA Carousel Progress, both very, very good in that box. So I'm super on board with either of those.
It's a
heck, Spaceship Earth, I think, would be great for it as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But it is a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day.
We would take the kids in there. We took the kids to Disney World quite a bit when they were young. And that was our nap ride. Which meant that I feel that I've seen Carousel of Progress perhaps more than your average Disneyland, Disney World attendee.
Yeah.
And I love it very much just because of the thoughts about, like, all right, now it's 20 years later. How are these people related to the people that look exactly like them from 20 years before? Ugh.
All these people with voice-activated ovens, which are totally now an actual thing.
But are there voice-activated ovens?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they've got ones. Are
there app-activated ovens?
Yeah, that work with your Google Home or your you
know.
Can I
tell you how many times? Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't say her name. She's listening.
I can, and I will. But unfortunately, I'm not on speaker, so I can't just make her start playing Despacito again.
Oh, my God. Dan and I were on a Zoom in the thick of the pandemic doing Zoom trivia. And Dan, or maybe we're just talking. Anyway, Dan screamed loud enough that my computer speakers, like, she could hear them yelling. And they told her by name, which again, I'm not going to say it, to play Despacito. And she fucking did.
Something that Blink-182 are doing on this most recent tour that they're on is saying into the microphone something like, okay, Google or Alexa, text mom, and then the most horrendous thing you could think of to text, and they're like, send, and then they hit and they play the next song.
Amazing.
Fantastic. Cool. And then Transit Authority, or like, because like there might be not, it might not be available to get. Oh, but we'd just reference it.
Yeah.
I'm in my speech clip zone.
Yeah.
Space
ship. Which, like, it could just be referencing voice activated ovens, right? Like, it could be a pretty niche.
Right.
Just sure. Something that
don't even need to like get too deep into it.
Carousel of Progress.
Because again, in the song, it's a reference to a misheard line from the ride. So like doesn't even need to be spot on, but what you got?
Carousel of Scogress.
The glee, the childlike glee, like a little kid stealing a cookie off the counter as you just inched forward and then away again and then inched forward and then said the carousel, then said to two adults over Zoom with the whole government listening, the carousel of Scogress.
Scogress, yes.
Which is the name of the episode, 100%.
Which is, of course, to the Library already. Of Scongress, which is a whole other thing.
A whole separate thing.
That's where you go to check out books and pick them up.
Absolute gold.
Pick them up.
Pick them up, pick them up.
Well, this is delightful. I'm glad this I could get you two dummies doing another ska song.
This is just fantastic. I'm just going to write down this carousel of progress here.
Thing. Yep.
What are our elements? These five words in Mandarin plus 700 horns plus one spider playing the guitar sounds like a ska song.
That's right.
Google Translate English to Mandarin skank.
Perfect.
That's perfect.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, such a delight.
Thank you for
if
joining.
If our listeners want to find more of you, where can they do so?
They cannot.
Good
enough. They truly can't. I'm sure I'm on Instagram. I have a Twitter. I mostly tweet about research If you picked up the latest copy of the Preventive Medicine Journal, I got a systematic review in there. It's pretty good. But this is it. I'm a hot commodity for Frankenstein's jukebox only, so.
Damn Skippy.
Damn Skippy. Enough.
We love to hear it. We love to hear it. We love to get that good niche content.
Niche content.
Going on in our.
We do have a lot of PMJ heads in the audience, so it may be that they are very familiar. They'll have come to this episode specifically for the, you know, the contact.
Exactly. We'll tweet that we've got Dr. Jenny Spencer here, and boom.
Boom.
They're here for it.
The most listened to episode.
Yep.
Just a bunch of ska nerds.
It'll go this one, then the episode with the Yules, and then all the others way below it. Jamie, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, as of this recording at the end of March 2024, I'm still at Unabashed James. And as always and as ever, if you don't find me there, then that means that I have made the ES to IE switch on Twitch. Nope. On Twitter. Not on Twitch.
Maybe on Twitch.
Maybe on Twitch. That could just as easily happen there. Either Unabashed James or Unabashedly Jamie. Nope. Unabashed Jamie. It's the same number of characters. And the same character. So that's where you can find me, where I'll talk about shows I'm on as a host, shows I'm on as a guest, and then, you know, if I'm watching Sister Act 2 and I have thoughts about how back in the habit you get at a Catholic school, then I'll tweet those too. So,
perfect.
The answer is very, very back in the habit. So
very back in the habit. Just gonna tweet. I've never seen Sister Act 2.
A young Lauryn Hill in it and does a very, very good performance.
I have now become slightly intrigued.
Yeah. It's on Disney Plus under Mysteries, and that drives me crazy because there's literally, like, the first one has at least an element of intrigue to it.
Right.
But the second one is literally like, can she get these kids? It's the same. It's like a mystery in the same way that School of Rock is a mystery. Like,
oh boy. Okay. I love it.
Yes. And Daniel, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on the internet basically anywhere at Dantendo64, Dantendo64, because that's where I hang, on Twitter, on TikTok, on all sorts of stuff. So that's where you can find me.
Absolutely. My percentage of the puzzles that I got plummeted after we recorded the show.
I really dropped the ball on Enigmarch. I started out strong and then forgot to do it and then was so behind. I was just like, well, I'm overwhelmed with how many puzzles I need to make and didn't make any more.
Fair enough. The real Enigmarch was the puzzles that went missing at the end.
That's exactly it. But we are proud members of the Scavengers Network. A fantastic network of podcasts and content. There's all sorts of shows on there. There's one of my personal favorites, Spooky Spouses, where spouses Jordan and Lindsay Reed talk about random spooky stuff and are just the most charming you can get. Just so great to listen to.
Absolutely. And
absolute dolls of humans.
Yes. Humans have become dolls, and they are the Reeds.
Humans have become dolls, and they are Jordan and Lindsay Reed. Jamie, what is your favorite Scavnet show?
Well, it's a show that is sort of like a leap year baby. You know how people are like, I'm turning 25, and they're friggin' dead because they're 100 years old? It's called It Jams for Thee, and it is a yearly show about the movie Space Jam, the prequel to Space Jam 2. It was called Space Jam, and it is everyone on the network except me talking about Space Jam yearly, and it's a very, very fun time to listen to as a listener to the show It Jams for Thee.
And by everyone on the network, you mean myself, Colin, Sid, Tay, and Az.
Yeah.
Great. One of my favorite things, timing-wise, that has ever happened is that Sid decided to troll me with a Shrek meme. Mm-hmm. As if you're a listener of the show, you know that I do not care for Shrek. And so she decided yesterday to troll me with a Shrek meme while her team, the Detroit Red Wings, were losing 4-0 to my team, the Carolina Hurricanes. And so I got to send her a picture of the score and say, "I'm sorry, what now?" And that went over very well.
Get Shrek'd.
For yours truly. Get Shrek'd. No. No.
More like
I feel very bad for Shred Wings. That, but Shred Wings. Anyway, it worked out great. Just timing-wise was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So there's so many great shows you can check out at Scavengers Network. Just Google Scavengers Network and there's you'll see all the different ways you can follow us and see our amazing shows.
The Patreon is going to be kicking back into gear. Colin and I have been talking about that.
Beautiful.
So if you would have an interest in something to do with Frankenstein's Jukebox that you might see is that we have like outtakes that I have, you know, clipped from and we have ideas about stuff. Let us know on at Frank's Jukebox or at Scavenger's Net. And yeah, Patreon's coming back. So, you know, get ready for that.
Indeed. But thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate you so much. And as we say at the end of every episode, Jenny, take it away.
We'll see you last year.
The Scavengers Network.
Creator-driven.
Community-focused.
Treasured content.